Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Welcome back, everybody. I've now got Jeremy Sampson on the line. Jeremy obviously is a well-known to all of our listeners, and he is known as a brand father and speaks to Michael or myself every Thursday. Now, Jeremy, it's been an interesting week, and I mean, most of today is probably going to be talking about interest rates. But let's you and I talk about stuff that's a little less technical, a little more interesting, perhaps. Yeah, I think one of the things that I found very interesting in the news of the last week is the end of Tupperware, the fact that Tupperware has now gone into Chapter 13, bankruptcy. It's the end of an era.
Good evening, Dawn. Good evening, listeners. Yes, the end of Tupperware, the end of an era. I think it's an interesting story from a branding perspective because, of course, it's been around for decades. But also, you know, just about any plastic container that we have in our house, and I'm sure most houses, people thought of as Tupperware. It almost became a generic term. And it is interesting how they've lost that distinctiveness. They lost the brand. There was so much competition. And as we often say on this program, if you don't stay relevant or distinctive, eventually you're going to wane. And that's what's happened in this case. But it is an interesting brand that just, I'm afraid, has passed its sell-by date.
And, you know, obviously they were one of the front runners in the whole sort of direct selling, so almost sort of MLM type of setup there. And, you know, obviously they were front runners and people, I mean, obviously until fairly recently were still getting involved in things like Tupperware parties. I mean, from my perspective, you know, the only time I got hold of my Tupperware lady is when I inevitably lost a lid of something, right? But you could never...
When you say that, I think we've got a drawer of loose lids and loose bottoms, and one of the challenges often is to find the right top for the right bottom and fit it together. But as you say, you know, people had Tupperware parties. I think for a long, long time, you could only buy them direct from Tupperware through the agents and at the parties and that sort of thing. But these sort of sales schemes, for the most part, have moved on, haven't they, as things become more and more digitized?
Absolutely. And obviously, there have been some dodgy players in there that have made the sort of, you know, the whole process less appetizing for people to make a living from at the end of the day. And it's just a sort of sad to see, but probably a lesson to all sort of companies out there, as you say, to stay relevant, you know. Unfortunately, absolutely, you know, with something like Tupperware, it became extremely easy to make dupes, as they call them these days, you know, knockoffs, and, you know, buy them at a fraction of the price. And, you know, they kept bringing the price point down, but of course that then eats into their margins and eats into their agents' margins. Then they really just couldn't keep up. But talking of relevance and talking of competition, Pick and Pay seems to be in a world of trouble at the moment.
Yes, I think it has got into a little bit of a situation where, as we know, any brand and any big brand is a little bit like a super tanker. And if you realize it's going in the wrong direction, it's already picked up a momentum to take it in the wrong direction. And to stop that momentum and to turn it around and to correct things is not easy. I'm afraid that Pick and Pay, over quite a few years, even a decade or more, has probably been going in not the right direction, shall we say. It's never helped when you've got a major, major competitor. And so with its demise, has almost been matched by the rise of ShopRite Checkers. And Pick and Pay today is in a bit of a pickle. You know, bringing back Sean Summers, and some will remember him from 20-odd years ago. And now, you know, he's in his early 70s, I believe, being brought back to right the ship, as it were. But it is interesting when you have a brilliant man in the original Mr. Ackerman, and what he did, you know, walking out from Greidemann's and Checkers and starting Pick and Pay, making a huge success of it. But then as he became older and less involved and brought in outside people to help run the organization, it seems to have lost its way. And now it's got a lot of catching up to do. It's going to be very interesting to see how they go, because I know that they're having to cut back a lot on their stores and on the sizes of the stores and in all sorts of ways, whereas ShopRite Checkers is just powering ahead at the moment and using their weakness as an opportunity to actually build their own muscle.
Yes, I mean, it's been very interesting for me to watch. You know, I spent 5 years at Edgar's way back in the 1990s. And it's interesting to see the sort of the trajectory, particularly of, because, of course, Pick and Pay have got a fairly successful clothing brand as well, and, you know, separate clothing shops. But the advent of Shein and Temu, who have very similar products at a much reduced price, must have been hurting them as well.
Absolutely. And this is where, you know, if you talked those two brands a year ago, people would say, who are they? And that's where the competition now is coming from anywhere on the planet. You just don't know what's around the corner. You might have your eyes watching who you think is your opposition, but you're actually wrong. And also the way the world is changing, AI and all these things, people have no idea really perhaps what it's going to be like in 5 years, let alone 10 years time. And the people who say they do know what's happening, I think have got a problem, because there are lots of people increasingly saying, we don't know. We can guess, we can have scenarios, but it's challenging times, it's different times, and we've got to be agile and adapt and adjust to stay, and back to that word again, relevant.
I suppose what we're talking about here is sort of reaching your sell-by date and trying to postpone that. And obviously somebody who sadly, you know, came to the end of their sell-by date recently was Pravin Gordhan. And you've had some interactions with him in the past.
It's interesting. I only had one interaction. And you may remember from this program, the well-known economist Tony Twine of Econometrics. And often on a Friday night, I was in studio with Tony. And I remember on one occasion he said to me, Jeremy, I'm very involved with Rotary and we're going to be having a big dinner at the Johannesburg Country Club in Auckland Park, and I'd like you to come and be our MC. And I said, sort of, why me? And Tony said, well, I think you'd be perfect for the event. And at any rate, I relented and pitched up, and it was a very big function. And the guest speaker was Minister Pravin Gordhan. So I said to Tony, well, I'm emceeing, but who's introducing him? And Tony said with a half smile, Jeremy, you are. And I said, well, okay, but who's giving then the vote of thanks afterwards? And Tony again smiled and said, Jeremy, you are. And here I was at the function. I couldn't sort of disappear and get my phone out and Google anything. I was there on stage having to welcome the minister and then later on thank him. And we were all sitting at a big round table. There were about 10 of us there. And I must say, engaging with conversation and listening to him, I found him incredibly impressive. If anyone has caught a little bit of the memorial service in Durban today, you'll have seen his two daughters speaking in an incredibly impressive way. And learning a lot about the man, which I wasn't aware of, and what he's been through, especially through the state capture years, I think he's one of South Africa's heroes. I know that there are some people who will try and erode his reputation, but boy, from being a student right through to last week, what a man of humility and meekness, and I think a straight arrow. And I think we all agree we need more of those in government.
I couldn't agree with you more, Jeremy. And let's face it, he was handed a poison chalice towards the end of his career.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Nobody could have made good with that portfolio that he was given. And in the couple of times that I've heard him speak, I found him terribly humble and really amusing and self-deprecating. And it was, you know, really interesting to listen to him speak, and especially when you consider that, you know, his origins were actually in the Communist Party.
Yes, apparently a lifelong Marxist, but I hadn't realized that, you know, he was on Robben Island for a period of time. He was moved from one prison to another and his life as an individual, but also the pressure put on his family and his children and the greater family as well. He really was put through a very, very difficult time. But as you say, he was a Marxist in the sense that he still believed in the principles of Marxism, and that was he had no luxuries. Apparently, the only luxury he had in his life was his Mont Blanc pen. But even to this day, his home was very humble. His offices, both in Cape Town and in Pretoria, were very basic and very simple. And not for him the posh car, not for him the blue light brigade. He kept it very simple, very humble. And he said he was working for all the people of South Africa, non-racial, non-gender-based, for all South Africans, so that we would rise together.
Quite unlike that tangerine tyrant and his gold-plated toilets on the other side of the pond.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I think there isn't a sort of a program long enough to discuss him. I think we just sit on the sidelines and shake our heads in wonder. I think one of the things that I just find interesting in that brand is, for example, the use of tariffs and fooling the American people into thinking that the tariffs are actually paid by the Chinese, when of course they aren't.
I think it's interesting, as you say, that when I try and watch a little bit of Bloomberg at times, the television station, business station, and listen to some of the economists. And, there's some very clever people saying, well, it's all very well saying we're going to put 200% on this or 100% on that. But at the end of the day, it's the American consumer will end up paying for it. And then sort of, should we say, unraveling the whole thing and talking about the real outcomes. And the last thing, of course, we want is a trade war. So where we're going to end up, I don't know. But as you say, we can joke about him as much as we like. But the fact of the matter is that come November the 5th, whatever it is, he might well be the next president of the United States. Now, that is a very, very real chance. And then we're going to have a very, very fascinating next 4 years.
Fascinating is one word to call it, Jeremy. So, Jeremy, wishing you and your family a great Heritage Day and all our listeners as well. Are you going to be imbibing in some good old cider?
Well, my roots are Somerset in England, and I have to say it is a day that I will try and find some decent cider somewhere. So I'll have to pop to my local bottle store and see what they've got. But yes, to everyone, we have a rich heritage here. We have become a melting pot in many ways. But I've never thought of myself as an immigrant, but perhaps that day will make me think of that and think to the future of how we can all perhaps work more strongly together.
Well, I'm obviously going to have to break out some Tusker beer. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Jeremy.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.